CFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, did you take the chorus stop?
Transformers! Defenders of truth! Robots who fight in disguise!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP, episode number 232, recorded February 4th, 2017. I'm your host, Ron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Megamus.
What's up?
In the room full of toys.
Yay.
Lots of toys. And Headmaster Don in the house full of toys.
Apartment, actually.
The apartment full of toys.
In the apartment full of toys. And Rick Alvarez in the basement full of toys.
No, this is the kitchen.
Well, you have a basement.
Kitchen.
You have a basement full of toys.
Well, no, the garage is full of toys. The basement's still under construction.
Ah.
I just dropped $9,000 on the basement just to do the ceiling.
Oh, gosh.
Was that for a drop ceiling?
Tiled, and then we're doing a rock facade, so like a mesh with a plaster over it to make it look like a cavernous interior.
Oh,
think
like
of like
the
back
inside
cave.
Of the arc.
Yeah, it's because we're making the inside of the arc, so that's... Saying the Batcave is the easiest way to describe it to contractors.
Got it.
They don't know what the arc is. Anyway, tonight is the Hodgepodge Show, and I thought I'd start off our discussion by... let's talk about little Seth Rollins and how he re-injured his knee. Duran, do you think he's going to miss WrestleMania?
I don't know, but we'll leave the wrestling talk to another show.
Yeah,
I have
no
my thoughts on that, but. I want to remind our listeners, we are also live on YouTube. So if you're listening to the audio download of this, you can also look at the YouTube video anytime. You can go on there and see what we're talking about. A lot of people are on here live with us tonight. I want to say hi to a lot of our regulars, Night Swords, Tekatron, Lotus Stark, welcome. And we're going to talk about, they've got some good ideas on here for some stuff for us to talk about tonight. So I'm going to mention some of that later on. If you have some ideas for some short topics that you would like to hear us talk about tonight, feel free to comment on the live chat on there, and we may talk about it on air. Also, you can connect to us with the podcast on Twitter at TFYLP. And most importantly, if you love what we do, go down there and subscribe and rate us. If you're listening to us on the audio version, subscribe and rate us on there. It's the best way to tell people that you like us, share us, and most importantly, beyond that, if you really love us, help support us on Patreon. Down here on the video, you'll see the link to our Patreon page at patreon.com/TFYLP. You know, every little dollar counts, helps us pay for server fees, upgrading equipment, software, all kinds of stuff like that. So
there really is an exclusive Patreon section to the website where we post scandalous images of ourselves.
Yes.
Which is only available to members.
Yes. You can see Don naked
hell.
Right. So you have to pay. You have to pay to not have access to that.
Yeah. See Don's naked laying on a bed rubbing on his Supreme Class Cheetor.
I just figured he was surrounded
now,
let
that mental image sink in.
Well, is it like the Burt Reynolds image, you know, back from the 70s where he's laying on
The little fur rug.
Oh, dude, here in Louisville, there is a pizza place here in Louisville down on Baxter Avenue.
That's a great story. So,
no, seriously.
What's our first topic?
No, seriously, though, there is a pizza place that has a mural of Burt Reynolds laying naked on that fur rug.
Good night, everybody.
Sounds about right. Louisville, you say, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Only in Louisville.
And that's why I haven't visited that place yet.
Well, at least it's not like Chicago and somebody's not burned it to the ground because of a cow. You know, so.
So what do our listeners want us to... What do they want to listen to? What are some topics they're throwing out there?
Tonight is kind of a free-for-all.
Yeah, tonight's kind of a free-for-all. We don't have a specific topic. You know, I was wanting to talk a little bit about the Marvel G1 comics, but, I really want to go back and reread those, the ones that I have here. I've got a big old comic box full of them. So we're going to just hodgepodge tonight. Let's go through here. Night Swords had a good question right off the top. Is Takara's current trend with masterpiece figures of removing toy-based details in favor of strict animation details good or bad for the future, of the franchise? Going away more from a detailed version of the robot, like, you know, the vehicles are very detailed. A lot of them are fully licensed ones. But then the robot mode looks very cartoonish. I think Inferno is a good example of that. What do you guys think on this?
Well, I think that's a very interesting topic, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're thinking into the future. And what I mean by that is there's only so many characters that they can make in that masterpiece scale for that masterpiece price point before the line starts to feel a little saturated and a little run down. So what if their forward-thinking plan is this? We're going to make the animated versions now, and in 10 years, we're going to make the toy version of these characters. We're going to go back and remake these masterpiece characters, but we'll do it off the toy version.
Kind of feed the nostalgia of for the toys that started over.
You're right, for the 40th anniversary.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, because you have to look at it, things such as what I'm trying to open here with minimal success, because apparently I've lost all dexterity in my fingers.
You just got fat fingers.
Yeah, well, it's yeah, for that too. Well, I'm all fat, you know. But there's a lot of me to love. I just got to find someone desperate enough. But this guy right here, I picked him up. Don't tell. Downbeat from Make Toys.
Oh.
And this is going to be my Masterpiece Jazz. Now, I know some people don't like using third party in the Masterpiece collection, but again, to
shame
me,
on
as
you.
Long, yeah, shame on me. But
no,
I,
not
I
you,
have,
them.
Oh, but I have, for example, I have the Hellfire and
Wrestle.
I have Hellfire and Wrestle. Those are my Masterpiece Inferno and Grapple, because it's not really toy versus animation. It's more like the character that I want on my shelf, that's the closest to it. But now...
Yeah, but closest to what iteration?
Well, that's it's... Well, to me,
that is the very heart of what we're talking about, Don.
Yeah, but I'm saying there's some on both Hellfire and Wrestle. I see a little bit of both in that design. But the reason I brought up Downbeat was because you can display him in either toy mode or animation mode. You just swing the doors down and clean them up a little bit, and you have either mode. I think you're right, Rick, because otherwise they would have already made some of these toys that have a switchable design aesthetic between ones that could be done.
You know what? It can't be done with every figure, Don. And
right.
I'm glad you see that. But like with Downbeat, it's a relatively simple thing to make it a cartoon versus a toy version. Guys like Inferno, you can't really do that.
Right. Yeah, Amaki Toys Hellfire, which is their Inferno, it kind of has a cartoon look, but it maintains the detail that's in the truck mode. You know, the feet, the legs have a lot of detail on them, whereas if you look at the Takara one, the legs are very smooth, much like the cartoon.
And that's one reason I didn't really care for, because when I think of Inferno in my own mental picture, those fit the bill better. And with them releasing the Masterpiece Optimus Primal in toy accurate colors this soon after the show accurate colors, that leads even more credence to what Rick is saying. But again, with it being the Beast Wars anniversary, for the most part, they don't need to be waiting another anniversary time to get that out on the market, which I can understand.
I wouldn't even be surprised if they went back and reused some of their tooling and just said, hey, we're going to add new parts to this to make it a more toy-inspired version of Inferno. But they keep they keep some of the guts in there.
Yeah. But here's something else. They're already releasing figures like Ironhide with special pieces and parts that was not available in the original release. So are they robbing Peter to pay Paul, though? That's what you have to ask, because you got someone who wants, say, Ironhide. But then they thought, okay, well, last time they did this, they came out 4 months later, and it had this, this, and this. Maybe I should wait and see if this is going to come out with a better selection or more accurate this or the part they didn't have before. So you're going to have a lot of people wondering, do I get this now? Do I get this later? I can't afford both. So now you've got people wondering, well, do I want to wait and see if they do a toy accurate version? Do I want the animation version we get now? I mean, it's adding another variable to your collecting on an already expensive line.
Well, I think it's mostly them trying to keep up with what else is happening in the marketplace by offering additional pieces like that. But remember, there's always going to be the people that have to jump on it no matter what. I tend to believe that the people who are going to wait are maybe the people who didn't necessarily want to spring for that particular figure right then and there.
Well, you know, that's a perfect example with me. I did not get Inferno or Grapple. One, because the price of Hellfire and Wrestle, I was able to get them for each $80 shipped, new in the box.
Which is an argument in and of itself.
Right, yeah. which is significantly lower than what Grapple and Inferno was. But I am going to get Artfire, because I do want that Inferno mold in at least one capacity. And with Artfire not really having an animation model, I'm sure there's artwork for him as if he would be in animation at some point. And you, Rick, you could probably tell me if that even exists or not. But I'm picking up the Artfire, and I'm paying the $139. Even though it has less stuff than Grapple and Inferno, because I do want one of that mold. And for me, it doesn't matter because there is no animation model, and this is the one I want.
What do you think,
Brett? That's a complex argument. Masterpiece is a little tricky for me. If there's an official Hasbro version, then I lean towards that version. I'll get that first, the Hasbro Takara version. And then to supplement my collection, I'll go to third-party guys. So I have Downbeat because I just don't think Porsche is ever going to be interested in doing anything. When I was there, it was a constant ask, and they said, we don't want to do anything with violence. Part of the German mentality. You can't really blame them.
Well, also, so, isn't Jazz, where he's a wide-body Porsche, isn't that also not exactly in, not entirely owned by Porsche, that design? It's like a racing team's. It'd be like a tertiary license that you'd have to pay, not only Porsche, but this racing team that uses that wide body style.
I think it comes down to Porsche. As far as I knew, from having worked on the inside, it came down to Porsche not wanting to do anything, and Volkswagen for the longest time didn't want to do anything either. So I was really, really happy when I saw that official Bumblebee come out as the bug. And I think that's just a testament to how well the brand has expanded, that they're willing to say, okay, we're going to make this character now, because it's Bumblebee and we love those movies, and it's a good representation.
Well, Volkswagen also needed some money to cover outlying costs they weren't expecting to have to pay. So that probably didn't hurt matters either, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was all before the recall, though.
Well,
but
go ahead, Don.
Oh, no, I say, you know, that's why I got downbeat is, you know, I can, you know, I don't mind waiting for, you know, a official Jazz, because I'm sure it'll be a very interesting toy. But as you mentioned, Duran, when I brought up the price, look at some of the prices that these third party toys are versus what the official masterpieces are. And for example, the Seekers, you've got these Conehead Seekers coming out of Takara for $150 to $180 a piece, and you've got some major QC issues, as Brett will attest to. Because, Brett, you've got Thrust, right? Is it Thrust?
Unfortunately.
And, again, when you say Masterpiece Seeker and he says unfortunately, there's a problem. Well, but I've seen reviews on Toy Worlds, and they're a lot more solid and a lot less money.
I'm angry that the Masterpiece Seekers generally run around $200. It's ridiculous.
See, well, just imagine.
I'm angry that they run around $200. They run about $200 and they suck.
Yeah,
tolerance is so bad that you gotta fix them to make them so they'll even stand. That's the problem.
I've watched reviews. I'm thinking about, I would like to have at least one Conehead. Seekers are not that important to me as having all of them. I have most of them, but I don't have all of them. But I do want Thrust because he's the most visually unique of the three Coneheads. And so I've watched the reviews. When they pick up a Masterpiece Thrust and you shake him and the thing looks like, you know, one of those little dancing things with all the legs, you know, doing the heebie-jeebie stuff. That's one thing. But the Toy World, you shake him and he's there. And, I mean, it's like you're looking at $50 to $75 less for a better toy.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. I also like the Hellfire and Wrestle, you know, you can get those for, what, about $115 brand new? And if you catch a deal like you got them for like $80 a piece, and then you look at the official Masterpiece one at $130. Fans Toys Quake Wave, $115, thereabouts, and then Laser Wave is $135, $140. What the hell? You know, and you know, that just totally flies in the face of all the people saying, oh, well, third party's so expensive and everything. Well, stop and look at the official stuff sometimes, too. Mm-hmm. Megatron, the official Masterpiece Megatron, astronomically expensive, but yet you can get Despotron or any of the other ones for nearly half that price or a third of that price.
And see, I've got a Polyon because I got him at BotCon in St. Charles because I got a deal for him and Ultra Magnus for a friend. Ultra Magnus was for a friend, so buying them both, I got a pretty good deal. A Megatron is an important character, but he's not like I have to have the best version for him to stand on the shelf and look menacing. But if I'm looking at that Masterpiece Megatron at $225, and I'm looking at Despotron, that Despotron is a fine figure for a hell of a lot less money.
Yeah.
And I've heard nothing but good things. I've heard Despotron has a few little niggles and wiggles and stuff. But
Brett, are you playing with paper?
Paper.
Yes, it's very loud.
So you know, it's so. Well, I mean, Brett. I mean, you know, Brett. You deal with a lot of more vintage stuff, but
yes, but
as far as the current stuff goes, can you see if you need just a Megatron look to sit on your shelf and be menacing? You've seen the pictures. Do you want to pay $225 for the Masterpiece Megatron to sit here and go, you know, or do you want to spend Despotron that looks fabulous,
$150?
Fabulous for $150. I mean,
do you want
that?
Do you want the answer you want to hear, or do you want to hear the real answer?
I want to hear what you think, because I know some people don't want third party in their Masterpiece collection. Now, my view is, as long as a character has a good representation, I don't care where it's from.
That's the problem. That's the problem. What I found is, when it comes to especially Masterpiece and third party, is I can't wait, so I buy, and then I have seller's remorse on what I bought because the next best thing comes out. I am a perfect example of that. I have a Polyon, and the only reason I have it is because I can't give it away. That's the truth.
Yeah.
So am I happy with a Polyon? I have him, but that's because no one wants him. So have I learned after all these years? Yes. I wait until all my options are out, and then I pick the one I want. Does that really answer your question? Not really.
Yeah. Yeah, it does to me anyway.
Getting back to what we were saying before, as far as animated, I think that third party has had a lot of success with the animated style, and I think that Hasbro finally caught on to that, and that's why we're getting better figures and more animated cartoon style. And I'm perfectly fine with that. Do I think that they have enough foresight, like Rick does, that years from now they're going to do this just so they can make toy accurate ones? No, I don't give them enough credit. I think they're
It's Takara, not Hasbro.
Whichever. They're not smart enough. They don't look that far in the future, in my opinion. They're just looking at the trend right now, and that's what they're doing. That's my opinion. I don't think they're smart enough to figure this out.
Well, I think one thing we need to keep our eyes open is if they do release characters in which they could have done, like Downbeat, and it's a very simple folding or something that you could have gone from a toy.
Take a generation's mold and make it bigger. You're correct.
Yeah. So if they could have done that on a figure and give you a toy or an animation model in the same toy without it being an expensive more than normal, and they don't do it
right
over a period of time, then we could be looking at what Rick's talking about is they could have done it. There's no reason they couldn't have done it unless that's what they're planning later on.
I disagree. I 100% disagree. And the reason I say that is look at when the third parties were talking about making Soundwave, and then all of a sudden Takara came out with Soundwave. They have these items. They have them. It's just they're not smart enough to incorporate them before it's – they're proactive, not react. Oh, I'm sorry. They're reactive, not proactive. They just had Soundwave
on the board, and the Masterpiece Soundwave came out, and we haven't heard anything about it since.
Yeah, but I'll be honest, maybe it also deals with the character that you're looking at. Some characters are must have for fans. Soundwave is probably going to be one of them, not just because he's another Decepticon, which we sorely need some.
No, I agree. He has a huge following, but I'm telling you right now, the simple fact that they reacted to that. They reacted to Shockwave, and now we've got Jazz, and they haven't reacted this quickly. Tells me they're not learning.
Well, they do have.
In my opinion, they're not learning.
Pieces lined up already, though, that we haven't fully seen.
They have plenty lined up that they haven't come out with. I guarantee it.
Right. There's a couple lined up that we pretty much know of that they're not that they haven't shown. RC Hound are the two that I can think of off the top of my head. But, you know, speaking about that Soundwave, that company, and I forget the name of that company that was going to make that amazing Soundwave.
Fans Toys.
Fans Toys, thank you. Yeah. That
sound wave disappeared from them ever wanting to produce that, never showed up again.
Right.
But so did that Hot Rod toy once Takara announced they're making a Masterpiece Hot Rod. And now, just last week, we see actual gray model images of that Hot Rod. And I think that was like a wait and see. All right, can we top what they did and make it better? And I think that's why we haven't seen the Soundwave, because there's only so much
we can do. No, wait a minute. You're flipping it. The third party's doing that. I understand completely. That's smart. But when you got the big boy that's trying to corner the market and be the big boy on the whole block, they can't be reactive. They can't, but they are. That's my point.
That's because the market has changed. You know, back in the 80s, Hasbro and Takara, whenever they were making the Transformers, they were it. You know, they didn't have to worry. You know, I mean, yeah, there were bootlegs out there, and Brett, you can attest to that. There's all kinds of vintage bootlegs out there. That's another argument for all these third party people, antagonists that says, you know, third party's bad and everything. Well, guess what? KOs and stuff have been around forever. You know, you can get, you know, official G1 KOs from back in the 80s. You know, five stars. Look at the star scream. I mean, it's so awesome. But anyway, now Hasbro and Takara have got these companies, as it were, these third-party entities. I think that's the best way I can put it.
Look, no, competition. That's what they are.
Well, competition. I agree with
competition.
That.
That's what they are.
Third-party competition, and they're going out there and not only doing what they do, but in a lot of ways doing it better.
Absolutely.
Than the official outsource. And this leads me into another question, a listener question that ties in with all of this that we've been talking about. Lotus Stark asked right after the first question, why do we feel that if something is heavy, that it is better quality than something light? And this you hear this argument nearly every day in the fandom, on the message boards, on Facebook, and everything. And Fans Toys is a perfect example of this. You pick up a Fans Toys Dinobot or any Fans Toys figure, Sovereign. Sovereign is a perfect example, you know, because we've got so many different Galvatrons out now. You got Titan Returns Galvatron with that stupid face mask thing that flops up that enrages me every time I handle that toy. They did almost everything else right about that toy, and then they get to that face mask. It's like, why the hell did you do this? This was dumb, you know. And then you pick up, you know, Sovereign, which is got so much die cast in it, and it just feels so quality.
I think that the term it feels heavy or light is being synonymous with it feels cheap, and it shouldn't. You could have a very, very heavy, hefty toy that's cheaply made, Cronus. And it's a piece of crap. The word, and you know,
using the term Cronus is a piece of cheap. Shit.
Yeah, they should. Cheap. It's cheap. It's not that it's heavy, it's light, or whatever. It's cheap. So that might be a misuse of the wording, I think.
Well, I mean,
because you shouldn't have heavy synonymous with good, light synonymous with cheap. It's either cheaply made or it's made well.
Well, if I interject here, I'll let you talk in a minute, Don. But whenever you look at the official product and compare it to their competitors, which are these third-party entities, these third-party competitors. They're putting out this product. You know, I understand Hasbro and Takara, they've got certain criteria they've got to meet. You know, production costs, piece counts, all of this goes into
safety
standards. Third parties don't have any of that. But when you boil it right down to it, if they you know, like the Masterpiece line is not aimed at children. You know, it's very clearly, even on the packages, you know, aimed at the adult collectors because they're more complex, you know, thinner parts and stuff. But there's less hollow stuff on a Masterpiece. Then you pick up an official toy off the shelf, out of Titan Returns, whatever, and there's hollowness to it. Thinner plastics, more rubbery bits. And then you go get a comparable sized third party figure, very little to no hollowness, you know, thick, sturdy bits, sometimes die cast. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't like die cast, but whenever you hold that weight in your hand, and I think this is my answer to the question that the listener asked, is that in your hand, you have weight in that toy. You feel the weight of that toy. You feel like you have, you know, your money has been spent on something of substance because there's some weight to it, physical weight to it. Whether or not there's quality to it is a different question statement all in and of itself. But you know, if you feel that you've spent money on a good sturdy toy, and then you go pick up something that's light and and thin and it feels cheap, you feel like you've wasted your money. And sometimes those thin, cheap toys can be cool toys. You know, there's some of these Titan Returns toys I love. They're great designs. It's just that they're thin and hollow, and it pisses me off. You know, but I still get them.
I denounce this whole notion that if it's heavier, it's better quality. I could take two boxes, fill one with rocks, and give you both boxes, and I don't think you're going to be happy with either one of them. I don't think that
well,
that's synonymous. But one thing I wanted to say real quick is you were talking about Masterpiece and how they're aimed at collectors and everything. And I guarantee Rick can attest to this. When they market these, they can't do that. They still have to have safety standards. They still have to have everything else that a toy for ages 3 and under do. And that's where the third party can skirt those issues and make something that you and I might like, but it would maybe not be suitable for someone who's younger.
All right, so speaking from experience, whoever is in charge really is the guide for what you're going to make, right? And while I was at Hasbro, I kept being told, we're never going to make a Masterpiece Soundwave. It turns into a box. We're never going to make it. Some grandma's going to buy that for their kid, and that kid's going to be pissed off because it doesn't do anything. It turns into a box, doesn't have any wheels, doesn't have any missile launchers or anything like that. It's not a recognizable item. Kids won't get it. Grandparents will think they spent all this money for something that turns into a rectangle. And sure enough, you have a change in leadership. This was after I had left. And you finally get to see Masterpiece Soundwave released at Toys R Us. Now, what they had told me when I was there, I was like, we can make a Masterpiece Soundwave, but he'll be a car. He'll turn into something else. I'm like, no. And Aaron and I had a champion that notion that Masterpiece is a representation of the classic vision of that character. You can't make a Masterpiece figure of, say, Soundwave and have him turn into a car, because that is not the rightful representation of what this Masterpiece line is about. And we had a fight for that. And that's a battle we ultimately won. And even better, once there was a change in leadership, he actually got Soundwave released at Toys R Us in America. And I forget the point I was trying to make.
Well, my question is that they still have the same They still have the same thought pattern, and what you say is true. That's what I'm trying to say. Even though you're gauging something more towards collectors, they still look at the whole, well, the grandparents are going to buy it and blah, blah, blah. And so they still have the same standards.
Right, yes.
That's that barrier that they haven't crossed.
Right. And yeah, thank you. Yes.
Yeah, that's
– Don,
we were on the same page there.
Don, I cut you off earlier. I'm sorry. Well,
that's fine. No. Also, one thing you're looking at is older collectors my age are looking at it from a standpoint of referencing what we had as kids. There used to be a chain when I was growing up called Gibson's, a little department store chain that wasn't real big. This was the 70s. And if I wanted a cheap little plastic car with little cheap wheels and one thin piece of metal as an axle, I could get one for a dollar. Now, this was 1974, whatever the case may be. And it was the little thin plastic. You went vroom, vroom, and if it didn't break on the first day, you were good. But now with space-age polymers and the technology, you can do more with less material, the way it's bound together, the way it's produced, the way it's assembled. So you don't have to have as much material to have a sturdy figure. But a lot of people, depending on how you grew up and what you grew up with, there could be some kind of age referencing, okay, when I was a kid, a thinner thing was cheaper, it broke more, it wasn't worth the money, and that's the way people are looking at it now. Like, you want something that has some heft because
it's a perception thing.
Whether it's true or not, because you can have, again, this masterpiece figure with all the current technology with less material is a better built figure than something that would be more material but not as well made.
Well, I got an example of a relatively hollow figure, and Rick just mentioned it short time ago, that I still regard as a quality figure, and there's no die cast on it at all. Masterpiece Bumblebee. It's tiny, it's light, and mostly hollow. But I think it's a phenomenal figure. You know?
He's tiny. He's toony.
Yeah, it's all a little loony. But it's you know, it's my perception of the toy. And you know, I go back, and I'm not backtracking on what I said before. I still stand by what I said before. You know, you hold something heavy in your hand, and it's your perception of quality in that. You know, you hold something that's light, it's got hollowness, you know, you can hold it up to the light, see the light through it, and it feels cheap and everything. It's a perception. It's not necessarily true about that toy. Oh, because it's cheap, it's because it's thin and hollow and light, it's a piece of crap. That's not necessarily true. But I want to interject what this listener said, bot therapy. I can't really relate to this because I haven't spent a whole lot of time around them, but I understand his sentiment. Bot therapy says spend some time in the high-end car market and the idea of light equals cheap will leave you. And
yes.
Lamborghinis, you know, some of those cars, Lotus, you know, very, very light vehicles, yet they're not very cheap.
Yeah. I think,
and you know, I want to make a point too, and unfortunately, in defense of Hasbro, they don't necessarily go out and say, "How can we make this as empty as possible?" That's not the mandate. The price per figure that they have to produce is really dictated by the big box retailers who say, we want to purchase a figure that's got to fit in the package in this space, mm-hmm. and we want to pay you this per unit.
Right, because they're worried about shelf space.
Right, and then Hasbro goes, all right, well, our big box stores want to pay us this price per unit. How does that money break down into making a deluxe, a Voyager, a leader class figure? And that is how they make those determinations. We got to hollow out the legs, or we got to hollow out the arms.
Right, but do you think that also has to dictate how they package the figure? Because they'll take a figure and package it one way, and then package it in another way that takes up way more space.
Well, for exclusives, there's more leeway. With exclusives, you kind of get to do your own thing. There's really no rules as to what you can do.
See, I always thought that. I did. So thank
you. But with carded, with like regular general release items, the cards need to be a certain size. The boxes need to be a certain size, as dictated by your big box stores. So they take, they put all that information from your Walmarts and your Targets and your Toys R Us's, and they put it into their spreadsheet, and they say, all right, this is what the units are going to cost to the retailers. All right. So we got to take that money, and from that money, we got to paint it. We got to package it. We got to design it. We got to test it. We have to copyright it. We have to pay all these people to work on it. And then we have to make a million of them or 9 million of them in order to pay all our bills and still be profitable towards our stockholders. Right. So well, it's not that they want to make something that has a perception of being cheap, but
unfortunately, that's a byproduct.
Their bottom dollar dictates it.
Unfortunately, the reaction of the consumer, which is us and even kids, our perception of it is this is cheap. You know, and Rick, that is a byproduct of what they've done.
You're well, low on milk. You might want to tell her to get some more milk.
Okay. Now,
just letting you know.
Yeah. Now, Jordan, you were saying perception. This is something I thought of while Rick was talking about that. Let's take. I don't have him right here. Let's take the American version of Power Master Prime. Let's take
him.
Well, he's over there. I can't get him without leaving. Here's the thing.
Okay, go ahead.
I think Hasbro could change the perceptions of the hollowness if they wanted to by basically making – again, Rick, I know your insider information will probably shoot this down, but this is what I'm saying. If you want people for this not to be a concern, if they would basically cover the hollow pieces – with panels, the insides still be hollow, but from an aesthetic standpoint, from a visual standpoint, it doesn't look hollow because these hollow legs are covered. Which will use a little more plastic, but I'm just saying, if possible, if they made it look less holy, less cavernous on say these inside of these legs. Then you might have the perception might change as, hey, this is a pretty good looking figure because you don't see all this empty space, which equates to, oh, there's not a lot of plastic in this figure.
Here is the answer
Real quick, before you say the answer, I wrote my opinion down here. Okay. I wrote what I think you're going to say.
All right.
I'll throw it up.
This is, I made similar arguments while I was on the design team at Hasbro. You know what the answer was?
Shut up.
Who cares? What does it matter?
Right.
So Brett's holding up a sign that says they don't care. Make money. Yes. That's exactly right.
Where are we not who sick cares? Or what?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Cares?
No,
because at the end of the day, they're still going to sell a million plus units of that Bumblebee.
Well, you know, again, that's what I was saying. You know, again, you've got insider knowledge that I don't have. It just seems to me that If they wanted to appear to be making an even better product, even if there's nothing going into it, changing the aesthetics of the product would help change the. I know.
But why do they have to appease the collectors like you?
Oh no! Why not?
Because you're still going to buy it, Don.
Right. Well,
you're still going to buy it.
I agree, because I'm sick and I buy too much crap. But here's the thing: I'm just saying. Changing someone's perception is one of the hardest things you can do in marketing. It's very hard, it's very expensive, and it's very difficult. But I'm just saying, if they can do a figure, visually make it look a little sturdier, make it look a little – they don't have
to. But how does that add to their bottom line?
Because it gives the perception of them doing better merchandise, even if there's no more money going into the product.
Here's a thought.
Real quick, let me ask you this, Don. Do you think when they come up with a design for a toy that it's all hollowed out and everything? No. It's a solid piece, and here it is.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then they say, okay, what's the price point? Well, it's at $20. Cut it. Well, I like this piece. I don't want to mess with that. Well, we can hollow out the back, so from this angle, it looks good. So we'll go with that. And Rick knows that. I know that too.
I mean, I believe me, I totally get what y'all are saying. And I'm 46. I got a Bachelor of Science in Marketing.
Oh, God.
I got a Bachelor of Science in Marketing. I don't have Rick's experience, but I have a lot more public experience working in retail. And I'm just saying, if they want to have a little extra goodwill or just positive views about their figures, when they can do something from an aesthetic standpoint to make it look a little stronger, if they can, that might be something to consider. That's all I'm saying.
I want to tell you a quick story, Don. This is about when I was working there. This is when the Transformers Prime Optimus Megatron Deluxe 2-pack came out. And it was Ain't It Cool News was contacted by Hasbro and given the scoop on it. They said, here are the official pictures. You guys, this will be your exclusive. You guys get to break this story about here are the first two figures of the Transformers Prime television series. I remember in that actual post from Ain't It Cool News, those guys saying, boy, before we agree to do something like this again, we really need to look at the figures to make sure they're cool before we agree to pimp someone's stuff like this. And that was in the actual body of the post of them announcing here the first two figures. And I'm sure that's still out there on ain'titcoolnews.com for any of our listeners to go out and check it out.
That's one of those things. I'm going to do it, but you ain't going to like it.
I was typing a response on here. What was that in response to? I was typing on YouTube, so I missed what you were talking about.
So I have to tell the whole story
again? No, just what you were talking about.
We were talking about...
You don't have to tell the whole damn story. Just what was the subject of it? What figures?
Transformers Prime. Okay. Transformers Prime reveals.
That's all you needed to... I heard the end of it. I just I missed the beginning of it because I was talking. Right. But
basically, you have someone that said they're gonna promote something for the simple fact of promoting it and be the first one. And they didn't know what they were promoting, and they weren't very happy with what it was.
Yes.
So.
Wow. Now, here's a thought, and you know, it popped in my head whenever Rick was saying how, you know, retailers will come, will tell Hasbro, okay, you know, we want these figures to fit in this price point and fit in this amount of space, and Hasbro's got to do that, but. Then you go. We as consumers go to the stores. Distribution is terrible, and even if these stores, and I'm looking at you, Walmart, because the local Walmarts around here are bad about it. They may get the figures and stuff. They may have them in the stock room, or they don't order them from the distribution center at all. The computers don't order them, or what have you, and the shelves sit empty for a long, long time. I know for several months in a row, my local Walmart had this many, and I'm holding up a big goose egg, zero, Transformers on their shelf. And I don't know if they just had them in the back room and didn't put them out, or they didn't order them. Now, you know, and Walmart is arguably one of the biggest box, if not the biggest box retailer out there that has some clout and can tell Hasbro, okay, you're not, you know, this is what you're going to do in our stores. Yet they don't follow through on helping Hasbro on their end, merchandising and selling this product. I don't understand how Hasbro can't do some pushback. And now, having worked in the retail environment from a vendor perspective, I used to work for Pepsi for a long period of time, and I know for a fact that whenever big box retailers, and Walmart was one of them, told us, okay, you have so much shelf space, and we're only going to allow you to have this shelf space. Your packaging and everything needs to fit in this shelf space, and you're going to sell it at this price. Yet, whenever we bring it in there, they cut us down, they take shelf space away, and they charge a different price than what we bring it in for. And guess what? Pepsi comes back and says, no, this is not what you agreed to. This is what you're going to do. You're going to hold to your word. And I wonder if Hasbro even does that. I mean, seeing as their product is not represented properly in stores.
Well, again, I hate to defend the bro, but that is not necessarily their fault.
No, it's not. But I mean,
distribution is not necessarily their fault. So what
pushback?
A lot of companies have done, including Hasbro. I know Lego does this. Schultz also does this. They will hire reps to go out to all the local box stores, Toys R Us, Walmart, Kmart, Target, and they're allowed to go into the back room, look for any product, bring it out, and merchandise it on the floor to make sure that as much product as possible is on the floor and that there's nothing in the back room that's new product that isn't potentially available for sale. So that is one way some of those companies combat that.
Hasbro used to do that years and years ago.
They still do. They still have people who do that. But remember, there's so many different lines now that, you know, you could have someone spend a whole day in just one Walmart. They only have so much time per store, and they got to hit up Transformers, Star Wars, Marvel. They got to hit up Disney princesses, ponies, Play-Doh, preschool, all that stuff in a certain amount of time because they have to hit so many stores per day.
Yeah, I mean, I actually spoke to a Hasbro rep at a Target several years back. This is back during the Unicron trilogy time. You know, I was in a Target and saw a person. They were dressed in business casual, and they were actually doing some stuff with the Transformers on the shelf. And I got to talking to them and found out that they were a Hasbro representative. And that's what they said they did. And I was like, this is great, you know, that knowing that somebody goes out there and does this. But my mentality at the time was, okay, they're doing this just for Transformers. But you still got, like you said, G.I. Joe and all these other brands, you know. They might spend 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes on the brand that I'm there for, if that.
Right. And remember, these things get ordered so many months and months in advance that, for example, when a movie comes out, the big box stores will make sure that just to fill shelves and to make it look like it's always full, they will order the first two or the first three waves of a line in bulk, more than they'll ever need, which is why your waves fours, fives, and sixes are so much harder to find. Because these big box stores want to make sure they have all the Iron Man's out and all the Captain America's out for when that movie hits that weekend. And it takes them forever to sell through those assortments. And that also causes lags on the back end, which forces those big box retailers to do one of two things. Either they return that product to Hasbro or whatever manufacturer for credit, or they in turn sell it to another company, which then takes it and it goes to like your Ross,
TJ Maxx.
TJ Maxx, yeah. Right.
Yep.
Well, it just seems to me, you know, and this is also coming from my experience, you know, I've encountered a situation where a big box retailer, you know, Walmart, Kroger, what have you, having worked for Pepsi, they give you so much shelf space, and then they arbitrarily say, okay, we're going to cut you down to this because we need to scoot this in here. They need the room for something else, or display space for something else. And then whenever a representative, say, namely me, would go into a store and see, okay, well, they've taken away the shelf space. And then they come back and say, well, you didn't send us the product that you said you was going to send us, oh, blah, blah, blah. So we took that place space away, gave it to somebody else, or, you know, used it for something else. And what we would have to, and this is where I was talking about pushback from Hasbro. Okay, yeah, they don't control distribution to the stores individually. But if, I'm sure they have on record, okay, let's say Walmart orders so many pallets, so many, you know, shipping containers of product X, and then we go to our representatives are going to the stores and consistently not seeing this product on the shelf. It's not our distribution problem; it's theirs.
Right. They decide what stores get what.
Yeah. And so it looks like they would do some pushback going to these retailers and saying, hey, your distribution centers are not pushing this product out as per our agreement. Why is this the case? You know, and that, it seems to me that should be going on. It's not.
And you know, something that's kind of the opposite end of that is sometimes stores will take an item and jack up the price. Toys R Us is infamous for that, where they will say, yeah, hey, we want an exclusive item. We want this whole line to be ours, so we want these G1 reissues. Okay, great. What do you got? Oh, we got this Perceptor. We got this Blaster. We got this set of Insecticons. We'll sell them to you for, you know, $10 a unit, $15 a unit, and you'll put them out for $40, and then they end up being $110 when they come out. So those extraordinary prices are not also, again, I hate to defend the bro, but they're also not necessarily.
I'm sure that Hasbro is equally appalled at some of the prices that they're seeing on the shelf sometimes. You know,
they get blamed for it.
Yeah, Year of the Monkey Primal. That thing is not $120-$150 toy. You know, for something that was maximum $50 15 years ago. You know,
and right. And you know what? It's crazy that at my Toys R Us, I can still find the Year of the Monkey Optimus Primal for whatever it is, $130. But on Amazon, it's $40. Mm-hmm. Or at Ross, somebody bought one today for $12.99.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I've seen
same thing. Another example: Star Wars. Mm-hmm. That AT-AC, the new AT-AT, came out right before Christmas. It was $300 everywhere, and I thought, who the hell is going to pay $300 for this? December 26th, Target drops them down to $150. A week later, Target drops them down to $90. Toys R Us drops them down to $250. Another week goes by.
It's my ass.
Target drops them down to $60.
Yeah.
And Toys R Us, I believe Toys R Us now has them for $230, and they're going to sit on those AT-ATs. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
for years.
One thing I have noticed working all my years of retail is some companies would rather the stuff sit there and get dust on it and not lose a penny on marking stuff down. And other companies would want to just mark it down, get rid of it, and get it gone. And that's part of the problem, is that some of these companies will not mark the stuff down for fear of losing money versus...
It's not necessarily that, Don. It's not that fear of losing money. It's the fear of losing a fully stocked store.
No.
Toys R Us have huge footprints.
Well, no,
right? Walmart doesn't have this theory at all, but Toys R Us does. They have these huge footprints, and they only have so many toys to put in those places. Right. And if they clearance out those AT-ATs, they're going to have a huge empty spot in their Star Wars section.
Well, it's not. No, I'm saying there's stuff that is on clearance or goes on clearance in some places, not even in that category anymore, and it's been that, and it's not marked down and got rid of. And that's assuming the stuff is not in the category anymore, and it's somewhere else. So you've got stuff that's not even part of that layout anymore. That is still not moving 1 and 2 years after the fact.
The Age of Extinction sparked things.
Yeah. So if that stuff is not being marked down and it's still in the category, you've got all that stuff clogging up the shelves. That's why you don't see anything. So, I mean,
well, a lot of times that stuff will move to the top of the shelves. And I'll give you an example. It's the Millennium Falcons, the giant 4-foot wide Millennium Falcons that were in the classic edition box. The box is made to look like the 70s. Those moved off the floor at Toys R Us and moved to the top shelf. And they sat there at $200 for years. And then one weekend, they dropped them down to $99.99 and they all disappeared. But they sat there on those top shelves for years. And I remember in the 1980s, I moved back to the United States in 1991. I remember walking into a Kitty City, a toy store that doesn't exist anymore. And I remember looking up on the top shelf, and there was a Cobra Pterodrome next to the giant Dino Riders Brontosaurus in the box.
That was a gorilla of mine at one time. But, you know, just seeing it's like the KB Toys, you know, you go into a KB Toys, you know, back in the day, and there'd be stuff from years before still on the shelf, you know, Animorphs, Beast Wars, Scavenger.
G.I. Joe's.
Yeah. but changing gears here, I'm going to get a comment that was posted by a listener, Troy Hahn. He posted in the preview video I had. I have something that you can touch on. A few people asked me about this topic the other day, and it really made me think about it. I was asked what I think and feel about the talented fans and the fandom, from the customizers, product photography, Transformers action figures and action style photos, fan fiction. It made me really sit back and appreciate it. There's a lot of talent in our fandom and our fandom's community, and agree that I don't feel they get enough kudos for their work sometimes. So thought maybe this should be a good topic. You know, I kind of fall into this category, so I don't want to offer.
Yeah, but your stuff's not good.
Yeah, I don't want to offer an opinion because I don't want to sound too self-serving. But what do you guys think about this?
Talent does not go unrecognized, and there are people in the fandom, albeit a very, very small percentage, because you can't give everyone work. But there are people in the fandom who have been noticed by Hasbro, contacted, and go to work for them, either in a full-time capacity, such as myself, or in a freelance capacity.
I know several myself. Yeah.
Right. There are people within the fandom that I hired at Hasbro to do work. Trent Troop, Greg Sepulak. I like what they were doing with the Transformers Collectors Club, and I hired them for several jobs at Hasbro. There were painters that were hired from just showing their customs. Who's that IDW artist?
Josh Perez.
Yes. Wasn't he one of the guys who posted a bunch of art, and then Dreamwave found him? And then Dreamwave folded, and now he's one of the big IDW guys. If that's a different Josh, forgive me. I just remember the name, Josh. But so talent does not go unrecognized. So I'm not exactly sure what else this person would want us to say.
Well, there's still a lot of fans out there, you know, like myself, that you know, we do what we do out of love. I don't seek recognition out of it. If I got it, that's fine.
So, are you looking for recognition from Hasbro or from your fellow collectors, enthusiasts?
I do it for fun, personally. But I think
that's what I would throw out to Troy. If Troy's out there, if they could post real quick, like who in the fandom is looking for recognition? Are they looking to be recognized by the Big H, or are they looking to be recognized within their own fandom and become like a pseudo celebrity? There's some pseudo celebrities from the fandom, and
there's lots of those.
You know, I would say, you know, Pew, the review. I don't know if
Pial.
I say that.
Yeah,
Pial.
You know, but you know him, right? Yeah. You may not like his stuff, but you're aware of him. You know, think of all the different podcasts and how many followers they have. God, I'm forgetting his name. I feel like an asshole now. Chris from
Chris Cho.
Yes.
Yeah, Evangelist.
Yes.
Internet personality evangelist.
Internet personality. He's a wonderful human being. I love the man to death. Had a great time with him when I went up to Canada 2 years ago. I mean, look at him.
Did you have a great time with him?
Mondo, right? There are people who somehow just have caught on. Ben Yi is another one.
I'm going to mention, and I can never pronounce his name right. Rick Dan K, the artist Dan Kana.
Dan Kana. I'm not sure, but I actually
got some of his artwork right here.
He started with 3H, the originator is a BotCon, and then kind of took off from there. Right. So I don't know if he was doing stuff before he hooked up with 3H or if he was known before then.
Nysor says Evangelist made it into animated. I missed that.
Yeah, he had a little cameo. So did Hydra, another great human being.
Oh, I know Hydra. Big, tall Hydra.
Hooked up with him when I was in Japan the last time and walking around Japan, right. These two giant Americans. It was pretty funny.
Brett's face.
Yeah.
You hooked up with him, huh?
Yeah, and one thing I was going to—alligator
in Japan.
Yeah. And then another thing I was going to bring. Duran has left the building. And one thing I was going to bring up was the fandom is very diverse, but there are some aspects of the fandom that don't get a lot of recognition or a lot of thought. For example, I can't draw. I'm not much photographer. One thing I can do is write. I'm not flawless, but I do love to write. This is why I was asking Brian Savage for many years, is instead of having the art contest, the diorama contests, have a writing contest and put out a snippet of a story idea and then have people write whatever they would, you know, like Cosmos goes into space and X, and then have people write a story. And then you would pick the finalist, and then you'd pick a winner, and that person could go in to write something on for the club newsletter, part help work on the comic. For those who are not artistically inclined, that would be something else. And I think people that do not just fan fiction, people that do a lot of the box writing, the lettering, that's an important part to me. To me, fan fiction is not a four-letter word. I have read many artists, many writers from many genres. The stuff is awesome. I would want to see these people officially published with these characters because they're that good. They understand the characters that well. So I would like to. I'm just saying, for my part of this, look, if you like these characters and you find a good writer, let them know that their writing is appreciated. Because yes, it may just be one story on fanfiction.net. But it could be good enough, because I read several stories that got me writing again because the characters were that good and that well done.
If I could give some advice to people who are interested in writing fan fiction, never publish anything that is not complete. Sometimes people publish, hey, this is a work in progress, and that might be the only source of that anyone gets to know that particular person by. And so never publish anything, never put anything out there until it's 100% complete. Word of advice. That's all.
Well, I think also fan fiction sometimes tends to get lumped in with other things that are less attractive, like slash fiction. You know, somebody thinks about fan fiction and immediately sometimes your mind jumps to the negative and you think of slash fiction, you know. And by that, I mean, you know, putting your robots in provocative situations. Yes. But, you know, I know that that's not what all fan fiction is, but, you know, it's sometimes your mind tends to go to the negative sort of thing. And whenever you hear fan fiction, sometimes you think of that. But if you're one of the types that reads, you know, Star Wars, you know, non-canon fan-written books, Star Trek books, you know, they're not official, not necessarily, but, you know, they're written works by other people other than the people that actually did the show, and they're just as legitimate, you know, and there's no reason that there can't be Transformer ones as well. And
so, okay.
But, you know, I'm going to change gears again before we wrap up. I got some things that I hear from Capture Prey, our sponsor. Great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com, where you can save even more on items $150 or more with free domestic shipping here in the U.S. And also, Mega Toy Fan, maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with MegaToyFan.com. You can find Mega Toy Fan at all the biggest toy shows year-round, such as TFCon and Jolanta coming up soon. Am I right, Brett?
I've never been to a Jolanta. I'm really curious.
I don't know if we're going to do that one.
You don't know about that one?
I don't know about that one. Definitely TFCon.
You're doing JoeCon, though, right?
I don't know. I don't know if we're, let's put it this way. We might be there in an unofficial capacity, and I'll give you this. If someone comes up and says something to me and mentions TFYLP, they're going to get something and not a sock in the face. So that's a good thing. So
he's going to lick your something. Cheek.
So there'll be something.
So if you come up to him, to Brett, and say, don't call him Jim. Whatever you do, don't call him Jim.
That's right. Don't do that.
If you mention Tiflip, he will give you a mint on card G.I. Joe.
Now, here's the funny part. Maybe. I did this once before, and I actually threw this out, and it was more of a local show in Ohio, and I don't remember what I had, but it was something. I even told Duran, I was like, dude, I had like it was like a $50 toy that I was going to give away to the first person that said something. And it didn't happen. Sorry, it didn't. This was earlier on before we came, you know, world famous.
Right, before I joined the show.
So this is before you and everything. So, you know, before we became world famous. So now you never know what you'll get. You really don't. So make sure you look out for me. See if you can't find me.
Absolutely.
And I'm not going to be dressed like Waldo.
You know, no striped red shirt. Now, it might be striped black and white, you know.
I might be strapping something, yes, but it
will be shattered glass, Waldo.
Yeah, shattered glass, Waldo. But, you know, going back to our sponsor, Capture Prey, you know, I do some photography for them, and I'm going to be photographing some things that's going to go up on the website really soon, and I'm going to highlight some of the things that's going up here, and I want to see what you guys... thoughts on some of these items. Some of these are really, really nice items. Just take, for example, this one right here. A nice minty fractal and pack rat from BotCon 97. Mint in sealed box. Yeah, Brett's got one right there.
I've got mine. Mine's packed away.
Yeah, but this is nice
it
and minty.
It was right here. I had to do it. It was literally right here.
But yeah. Just having my hands. This is the closest I'm ever actually going to get to having one of these, because you know it's.
I'm glad it's not a girl.
They're quite pricey, yeah, but it's a beautiful, beautiful set. Check out the artwork on the back. Those Hartman era exclusives, just gorgeous. What are your guys' thoughts on this set?
What are those sell for now? 400?
About five, actually.
Yeah, that's
one of my favorites.
Yeah, I've got a story about that. I've told it before, but 97 was the only BotCon that I could not attend. I recently lost my job, and I actually got hired a month after that, so I could have gone. But again, you don't know how these things are going to work, so I could not go to Rochester that year, and that's the only one that I've missed. And John and Carl were nice enough to hold me. That and what was that year's toy with that? The other
Yeah.
You're talking about the 97 BotCon?
Yeah.
Was it
something else?
Was it the little decoys that were painted?
Oh no, it was the vice grip recolor. The vice grip recolor.
Sandstorm? No, didn't that come with Antagony?
I thought that was with Antagony.
Oh, there's Antagony. Okay. Well, anyway.
What year was Sandstorm?
Your story's falling apart, man. You've got some facts going on.
Okay. At any rate, John and Carl was nice enough to hold one back for me. I sent in the registration money, and then they were able to, and they sent me the fractal and pack rack because they knew if I could have been there, I would have been there. So they went ahead and sent me one. So I still appreciate them for doing that for me, being the only BotCon I couldn't go to.
One of my favorites. I liked it.
Antagony's, I believe, the only American BotCon figure I don't have.
I like that one, too.
Okay. I'm going to hold up another figure.
Duran, since we're talking about photography and we're talking about fan recognition and stuff like that, you know, somebody noticed that you were doing these amazing pictures and what happened with that?
I don't know. It's some guy just said, hey, would you take some pictures for me? And I guess they're going to show up in a book.
So
he was walking down the alley.
Be more eloquent.
The guy said, come here. Let's take a picture of this.
Take a picture.
I don't like tooting my own horn, so
I'll be sure to be skin.
You tooted his horn too? Damn.
So, Duran's photography, I have a book coming out later this year, and this is my fifth or sixth book. I don't even know anymore. I think it's my seventh book. And Duran did about 80% of the photography for it. So you will get to see your stuff published. So that is one way that being a fan has led to, I guess, work, which is the best type of recognition you can get.
It was actually after the photos were finished and everything, my mom, I told her while she was in the hospital, and it made her cry. So I've got to get a book for her, too. So I'm really thankful for the opportunity that you gave me there, Rick. I enjoyed doing it. A lot of time constraints, but it was still quite an enjoyable experience.
Honestly, I put it in a message to Orson of Captured Prey, and I didn't realize that you were on the message too. But I remember telling him, I'm like, yeah, the only reason I did that book was so Duran can get his pictures published in something. And I didn't realize that you were also in that message.
Oops.
Well, hell. Shucks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so I sat down and wrote a whole book just so you can have some pictures printed.
I appreciate it. Well, speaking of more photos, what about this guy here? I have some mixed feelings on this guy. A nice minty Sentinel Maximus from...
Great Debacle.
Yeah, the OTFCC, what was it, 04?
I got mine in the mail. I ain't worried about it.
Yeah.
I got mine for $60, like later that year after they finally came out. Hey, do you want to tell people the story behind that? Do you know the story behind that?
Well, it goes back to Glenn Hallett. He was the
Who shall not be named.
Well, I think it's been so long now, there's a lot of water under the bridge. He's starting to come back to the fandom somewhat. I know he's on the outskirts and still watches and everything.
Not on my watch.
But he...
I believe he still owes me a Unicron statue.
He had the official Transformers convention license, and he called it OTFCC. Took it in the official direction before BotCon got it in 05.
Before Brian Savage and company.
Yeah. Yes.
Got it.
And he had some monetary problems. I believe it was 05 that this came out. Was it 04 or
04? 04.
Okay. He had some monetary problems, so much so that they wouldn't even open the dealer room doors until... he paid his bill, and he had to go around to dealers asking money for it. And this is second and third hand accounts, so please take what I'm saying at a grain of salt, unless either you want to, any of you all want to corroborate what I'm saying here.
It sounds oddly accurate.
But he had to ask, this was. You know, people had already traveled to BotCon. They were waiting outside the door, and the hotel would not open up the doors until he paid his bill. And he had to get the money from the vendors that were already present at the convention and set up. So that gives you an idea of the problems that was going on. Well, we as fans, and I was an attendee in the this one. It's my very first Transformers convention I ever attended. And we got there, and there was supposed to be this exclusive and the Mega Zarek, which was the Armada Megatron redeco in different colors.
And black.
Yeah.
That was there, right?
Yes, it was the only exclusive that was actually there, if I recall.
And, of course, the plates weren't there either.
Yeah, the plates weren't there, and the Sentinel Maximus. And we were promised that Sentinel Maximus would come. They were produced. Unfortunately, they were sitting in a warehouse without the boxes, without the, they were just in their trays shipped from the factory. And I don't know what all happened, but eventually the license had to be given up by Glenn Hallett. I don't know if he voluntarily did it or Hasbro wrestled it from him. But I don't know the details on that. However, the Sentinel Maximus or Sentinel Maximus figure, Hasbro actually had to obtain them from him. They produced the boxes, from what I gather, to have them put in them, and Hasbro sent these out months after the show was done and gone. And I actually had two of them on order, and both of them were, I got it, and it was bittersweet. I'm like, I loved it. It was beautiful. It was my first big exclusive that I ever got from a convention. I didn't want a Mega Zarek because I wanted this, and I got there, and this wasn't there. So you can imagine how many irate fans there were at that show. That being said, I still had a fun time at the show, and I personally have no ill will toward Glenn Hallett. I just want to state that. I'm just trying to state facts as I know them, if somebody wants to correct me.
Screw that guy.
But
I know that's not a popular thing to say, but, Michael's not on the show tonight. I was at 2004 also, and Brian Savage was there as well.
Yep, and, he sure was.
And, I mean, he who shall not be named already knew that it was over. Once he saw Brian there, Brian was flown in by Hasbro, and they had already asked him to do the show. So Brian's like, well, I don't know anything about this, and I don't know, when is this all happening? And they're like, it's happening tomorrow. Can we fly you out there? It's like, well, all right, if y'all going to fly me out there. And Brian, I love Brian Savage, by the way, but that's my impression of him. So he sat there at the door and he counted to see. Yeah, he sat there at the door and he counted to see how many people came in through the doors. Because at that time, Brian was already doing the G.I. Joe convention and had been doing it for quite some time. And then the very next year, we had BotCon 2005 in Texas. Dallas or Fort Worth, Texas.
Shocker.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of ill feelings that was surrounding those conventions. You know, like I said, I still had a great time at the one that I went to. And I, you know, even though I was angry, I didn't get the toy that I had paid for in advance. Whenever I got there, I eventually did get it. I was worried that I would wind up having to get a refund. And even if I recall correctly, there was concern that because he was giving up the license, that many of us weren't going to get a refund.
I think at some point there was someone was gathering info for a class action lawsuit, and I think at that point Hasbro stepped in. I'm fuzzy on that, but I think that's what ended up happening, which is why Hasbro ended up making those figures.
Yeah. But, you know, from what I understand, the figures were actually produced. They were just sitting in trays in a warehouse. The packages hadn't been done yet, and Hasbro actually, once they obtained all those figures, they boxed them up and got a list of all the people that had ordered them and were entitled to some, and they sent them out. So, yeah, Sentinel Maximus, actually somewhat hard to come by. He's probably one of the harder exclusives to come by, I would imagine, from all the official conventions.
What does that sell for nowadays, Brett?
What's that?
The figure we've been talking about for the last 20 minutes.
Sentinel, about $250.
Yeah, this one that's here it? In the mailer box, he's got $250 on it. So
yep.
It's that being said, I'm not a big fan of the mold. But it is still a pretty mold. You know, it was one of those things.
It does have two new heads on it. Or does it have two new heads or one new head?
I think it's just one new head, the big head. The big head. So what's your thoughts on Sentmax, Brett?
I'm trying to get over the two big heads thing you just said. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it. I got mine in the mail, so I was very happy. But I also had to work to get that. One little bit of information you forgot was when you got there and they said, it's not available. Can you come over here and reconfirm your name and address and write it down in here with your phone number and blah, 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 blah. And if you were brave enough to do that, that is what they sent to whoever took over and had them produced and sent to you.
They had actually lost the list, I guess.
He had lost, whatever. He lost the list, yes.
I believe if anyone knows Tony Pareto of Tempting Toys, he was the dealer that saved BotCon that year by providing a large influx of cash at the last second. See him for more details. I'm sure he's happy to talk about it. And we could do a whole show on just trash talking man.
I don't want to trash talk people. I just want to present information that people may not be aware of. But you know, regardless of our personal feelings on someone, you know, this is what I know, and this is what I experienced as a fan and attendee of the show. You know, maybe sometime down the road, I fully invite Glenn Hallett to be a guest on this show.
I'd tear him apart. I'd tear him apart. I mean, we wouldn't be able to broadcast that show. I mean, I think the man still owes other people Unicron statues as well, plus alimony and child support and what have you. I believe he still owes me a Unicron statue.
Paid
for that $125, however much money that was back in the day. a hard hero Unicron statue.
I got one right here.
I've got one or two of them.
OTSCC exclusive?
It started off as an exclusive, mm-hmm. and once the deal fell through, they released it. Hard Hero released it on their own.
Oh. I've got something better. I've got a Massey.
Has he attacked you yet?
No, he being good boy.
I have one of the. I don't know if I should get into this. There were a number of exclusives that were shown, mm-hmm. like future exclusives that were shown, which never got released. Now, there were some figures that were produced by Hasbro, which were featured in the comic books, but those were just one-offs that were done by the Hasbro paint shop because they were featured in the OTFCC, Oh Fuck, comic book. But there was a couple of exclusives which were intended for production, which never saw the light of day, which apparently are out there somewhere.
What might those be?
I don't know.
I'm just curious.
Hey, you know what? There is a comic book as well. It's a black comic book from OTFCC with a gold imprinted Unicron on it. And that comic book never came out, apparently. I didn't know that. And I remember one day I was at Hasbro just going through the box of free comics. I'm like, I don't have this cover. And I took it. And then somebody had a show. They're like, hey, did you ever find while you were at Hasbro, you know, the last comic book from OTFCC that wrapped up the story? I'm like, huh? I don't know. Maybe. They're like, it was black with a gold Unicron, with a gold foil Unicron on top of it. And I'm like, yeah, I did. I thought it was a cool cover, so I took it, but I've never read it, and it's buried somewhere, and it was just in the free pile of comics, which had been sitting piling up for years.
Wow. So you still have it? That's the question?
Yeah, it's in the garage somewhere with everything else until the basement's done.
So Don, we didn't hear your thoughts on CentMax and experiences therein.
Yeah. Okay, I'll be honest.
Please.
During that time period, I was not a very open-minded person to the events that were going on. Therefore, I was not at 2004 OTFCC. I was at BotCon 2004 with John and Carl.
A competing Transformer show.
I went to both.
Yeah.
Right, I went to both.
John and Carl, I owe my entire BotCon history to those two because, again, as we've said, as I said in the past, if John had not responded to my letter in Lee's Action Figure News and Toy Review, I would have not known about BotCon until probably well after the fact. I would not have been involved with the fandom near to the degree that I was at that point, and I was just really there to support John and Carl, which would have been their last year running BotCon. That said, I did pick up Sentinel a couple years later. Got it for, I think, with Duron, paid $60 for it. It was more of a completionist figure than something that I liked it. It was a BotCon figure I didn't have, so I picked it up. I like it. It's fine. But again, there's so much negative connotation on what was going on at that time around that figure. It's a nice figure. I've got it. I'm happy. I just wish all the crap surrounding it didn't have to happen. But because it did happen, we did get Brian coming in. And in the 8 months Brian had, we got a hell of a show in 2005. I mean, I think for the time period they had, we got an excellent set. We got a fabulous location. I'm sorry, I got to use the word fabulous location on that for that box.
That is a nice hotel.
Yes, but it's just again, it's the negative connotations around the toy kind of keep me from gushing its praises. I like it. I like the box. It's just a shame all that had to happen.
The one exclusive that OTFCC was supposed to have that never actually came to fruition that I always wanted Defensor. Was that Defensor?
I have
Fire talked. Convoy and Defensor colors.
Yes.
I have a Defensor head.
I talked to Brian on several. I said, Brian, I remember telling him at one point, it was either during the dinner or a minute when he was relatively free. I said, you know, if we forsake the box set, and this is the one, you know, we have some smaller figures, because this was early on, and not long after we found out about it. I said, can we 1 year not do the box set and go back to the way it used to be and get like one big figure and then maybe some smaller figures so we can get that Defensor? And they were already pretty much committed to the box set. I mean,
he couldn't have given it to you even if he wanted to.
Right. But because
the tooling no longer existed.
Right. But you know, I'm saying I have asked him in the past, point blank to Brian's face, pretty much begging him, can we please somehow get that figure?
We pitched that to him when I was working with the Collectors Club before I worked for Hasbro. We pitched that figure. He's like, all right, I'll look into it. But that tooling and the three car robot brothers no longer existed. They had been run to death. So it was impossible to make that Defensor.
And it's not cost effective to do those type of figures anymore, yeah, to remake those.
Well, remember, Fire Convoy was in the list of names for Masterpiece.
It would be entirely new tooling, though.
Right, but I'm saying that, but also around not long around that same time period, was it E-Hobby or Rick that was going to redo
the Fire but they were going to make a whole new tool. They were going to make a whole new tool for it.
Okay, I didn't realize it was I thought it was a reissue of the original toy with the Master Sword, but not the Godfire version. Okay, yeah. I misunderstood that. Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood that.
Well, you know, I think we've had some great discussion tonight. You know, lots of great comments, and this basically boiled down to a listener feedback and question show, and we love our listeners. We love the comments and questions that you pose us. Look, you know, we took a couple, three questions and comments and turned a whole episode into them. Fun. I think this was a fun episode, honestly. We hope you guys have enjoyed it too. Brett, do you have any closing thoughts?
Nope, I don't think so.
You just chilling out and maxing, relaxing, all cool, sitting there, shooting some Transformers out by the school.
Shooting some pool.
Yeah. How about you, Don?
Nothing. Just thanks to everybody for participating in a little roundtable discussion. We had a lot of fun tonight, a lot of interesting discussion.
Informative,
Yep. I guess basically if you see something in Transformers from a fan that you like, whether it's artwork, whether it's fan fiction, whether it's poetry, whether it's something that's been crocheted and you see it online, let them know you appreciate it, because we're all friends. You know, let them know.
You know, like I said, I don't want to toot my own horn, but if you do like my photography, check me out at facebook.com/lightbox product photos and like my page, Yellow Wolf Studios.
The name should be a dead giveaway.
It's named after my favorite bot. Yes. How about you, Rick? You got any closing thoughts?
Yeah, I last month I've been going through a transitional period.
Did you get the surgery?
I came close to getting a surgery.
Okay.
It was one of those extension type.
It was one of those things where we're in this new house. A lot of the stuff is still packed up, but my wife dug out my scale. And I got on the scale for the first time in 6-7 months. I was 283.1 pounds, and it frightened me because that's almost close to 300. And my dad was around 600 pounds when he passed away. So I have been on a very, very strict South Beach-inspired diet the last month. And in the last 4 weeks, I have lost 16 pounds just by dieting and doing my regular exercise routine of martial arts and kicking ass. So I just couldn't take it anymore. Last night or tonight, I went out. We went out to Uno's Pizza, and I had a nice 2,400 calorie deep dish pizza, and it was like an orgasm in my mouth.
And all those 16 pounds came rushing right back.
So tomorrow morning, I am going to wake up and go for a run. So if I've been moody, if I've been cranky, if I'd say disparaging things to you, which seem out of the normal compared to my usual disparaging remarks, it's because I'm on this crazy diet. And you too can go on this diet. I highly recommend the South Beach diet. You can still have some carbs. And then what helped me a lot was an app called MyFitnessPal, which is a free app, MyFitnessPal. It's by Under Armour. And you just plug in everything you eat, and it keeps track of it, and you tell it how many pounds you want to lose and in what time. And I hope to be bikini ready by the end of March when I go on vacation.
There's a melt image. Harry well, Rick Alvarez in a bikini. Oh, God. Why did I get a picture or a mental image of an elephant eating peanuts? I just
want to know why you didn't end the show 5 minutes earlier.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be our cue. I want to thank everybody who's tuned in tonight and join us again next week for another TFYLP. I'm going to have this episode up on the server as soon as I can, probably in the next day or so. We'll see you next time on TFYLP. For Brett, Don, Rick, and myself, see you, everybody.
Take care, y'all.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.